The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 Podcast.
We are back here for the second half of the show. We've already had John Adams and Tony Barnhart and others, Matt Berry. Let's get to the calls and check in with Roger in Texas. Hello, Roger.
Hey, Paul. Thanks for taking my call.
Roger, are you there?
It's okay. Yes, sir, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, I
Paul?
Can. I sure can.
Okay.
Go right ahead.
All right, great. Hey, I've got a couple of thoughts I'd like to share with you and your listeners, if that's okay. All right, well, first, Saban said during his conference that fans were an external factor and meant nothing and contributed nothing to the outcome of the game, which sounded like to me that he doesn't care about his fans, his fan base, or whether they come to the game or not. So I suggest to them that they quit building statues and bending the knee and giving their undying devotion to him. Secondly,
well,
as far
by the way,
as Jimbo's
you can suggest that all you want, but nobody's going to listen.
Well, I know that, but that's just my feeling about it. But secondly, as far as Jimbo's contract, that $90 million contract, a hitman costs a lot less than that. Thank you, and have a great day, Paul.
Just still trying to figure out what he said. Tyler is up next. Good afternoon.
What's up, Paul?
Hey there. Good afternoon to you.
You know any good hitmen?
My Rolodex is, there is a dearth of hitmen in my Rolodex at the moment.
Well, listen, man, I'm driving down 459. I'm fighting the traffic right now, but I wanted to touch base with you. I think it's the third time I've called. But I know that you probably have touched base on this in the past, but two quick points of conversation here. The first one was on Brian Harsin. I'm an Auburn fan. So you look back over the past 2 years, and I'm looking back at the Derek Mason hire, and you're looking back at the Mike Bobo hire, and then you had a mass exodus of the players within the first couple months of when he came in. What was the problem there? You can't blame it all on the boosters. Was it a personality conflict? I really don't. Nobody's really ever told me why Derek Mason left. I know why Mike Bobo left. So what is your thought process on that led up to this point that he could have probably saved himself from this to get to this point? Because you have coaches all the time to swap conference. I mean, Brian Kelly's an example. So what went wrong there?
Well, I think Brian Harsin tried to get along, and he brought in these guys who he believed and other people told him would work out, and I don't think it he was not comfortable with it. Remember, he fired that wide receiver coach about four games into the season last year. That created a big controversy.
Yeah.
And I think he ended up maybe doing himself some damage by that. And then he overhauled his staff and decided to elevate people that he had previously worked with. So he gambled. Remember this line before the season? He bet on himself.
Yeah.
Well, he went bust.
Yeah.
It didn't work. And that's why he is close to the end.
So let's talk about Derek Mason for a minute.
Okay.
Is he a good football coach in your opinion? And do you think he's – what went wrong there with these?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I know what the narrative is on Derek Mason, but yeah, I think he was a good coordinator and a terrible head coach. So,
okay.
What did we learn from Derek Mason in 1 year at Auburn? Really, not very much. I think Derek Mason just looked around and said, "I want out of here." He, how much he contributed to that, I don't know. But it was interesting that after Derek Mason left, a lot of the negativity started percolating over. I just don't think Brian Harsin. I think he ended up getting himself in a situation where he didn't have a lot of friends. He didn't have a very good team. He's not a typical SEC recruiter, so he tried to bring in players to his system as opposed to be able to beat Kirby Smart's team and Saban's teams and everyone else's teams.
Right. Well, and one more question, Paul, and I'll let you go. So, okay, so we're at a point where we're probably going to see Brian Harsin is going to be gone. So what is the expectation of the boosters? Because, I mean, are they really thinking that they're going to, the next coach is going to win, going to average 10 to 11 games a year?
No, I don't think so at all, Tyler. I think what they're expecting, let's play this out for one moment. Matt Berry thought or suggested Hugh Freeze. What do you get when you get Hugh Freeze? Okay, well, you get the automatic. He's been in the SEC, and he's beaten Nick Saban twice. I mean, you'll hear that ad nauseum. But he's also a very smart offensive coach. He's recruited in the SEC, so he understands the nuance of that. And by the way, the nuance of when he got some of the top players in the country, Kim Dichey and others at Ole Miss, is a lot different than it is now. He ended up going through a very vicious and lengthy NCAA investigation, which I think has caused him more problems in terms of getting a new job than the episode with the burner phone. I think he could have. I think if that had been his only issue, he would already have a major head coaching job right now.
No, I totally agree. I guess what I'm saying is, like, if you left Brian, let's just say you had a vote of confidence from the university and you said, okay, we're going to leave Brian Harsin alone for 2 years. Is he going to give you 8 to 9 wins a year for 2 years and then, you know, versus a Hugh Freeze? Is he going to give you?
No, Tyler, I don't think he will. I don't think he will for this reason. I am now of the opinion after watching him for 2 years, I don't think Brian Harsin is either willing or can compete from a recruiting standpoint at this level. He has a different philosophy. And that makes him good for Colorado or Arizona State or somewhere else. It just doesn't work at Auburn.
Okay. Well, that's cool, Paul. I just want to check with you on that, man. Have a good day, brother.
Yeah, and listen, everyone is going to say the same thing, that Brian Harsin's a good football coach. But you can be a good football coach and be a fish out of water. And I think that's what he is right now. Let's move along and check out Steve, who is in Mobile, Alabama. Hello, Steve.
Hey, how you doing today, Paul?
We are doing well.
Good. I want your opinion on this, and I'm going to go full circle back to the buyout of the college football coaches. I mean, how do you motivate a coach to succeed when going in you tell him if you don't, you get $90 million? I mean, by comparison,
you don't. Listen, we all, Steve, those of us who work for a living, who didn't inherit a fortune or work for a family business, what motivates us? It's our salary, it's our security, it's what kind of benefits we have for our family, and as you matriculate, what is going to be there when it's all over, and Jimbo Fisher is already wealthier than the majority of us right now. He already has more money than almost all but a few people watching will ever see.
Exactly. And so, you know, by comparison, every marquee player in the country gets up every Saturday morning motivated by one thing to succeed that day. And I'm trying to wrap my head around how we got to the point where we tell college football coaches, if it doesn't work out, your buyout is more than your next 8 to 9 years, you know. And why would you ever undergo the scrutiny of day-to-day? I mean, everything.
By the way, Steve, I think it also added one more thing to Jimbo Fisher. It enabled him and emboldened him to go where no one else has ever gone before, and that's to criticize Nick Saban. He didn't care.
Well, I guess that's true, but I mean, you know, I criticize a lot of people, but I don't criticize people that are outperforming me.
Well, no, that's I think sometimes you can get so full of yourself that you just say things, through arrogance. And there's no doubt Jimbo Fisher is arrogant. It's okay to be arrogant if that's part of your coaching personality. But I don't know what motivates him. He's already won a national championship. He's got a dream job. He's recalibrated his entire life. And I mean, clearly he has recruited well, but from a coaching standpoint, I'm still trying to figure out what his offensive philosophy is, even though I'm told by everyone he's such a great offensive coach. Let's check in with Edward in Selma, Alabama.
What's going on, Paul?
Edward, how are you?
Man, I'm good. I ain't talked to you since February when I was on here defending horses from Jimmy Rain, and it looked like I stuck my foot in my mouth.
Well, you were right. You were right to defend him. What they were doing to him was wrong, but that has nothing to do with what's going on right now.
Yeah, I mean, it comes some point where the product on the field got to show some improvement, and I don't think it's going in direction. And it ain't all his fault. But, Paul, I hear a lot of names getting thrown around for this head coaching job, even though the man still got the job. But I think it's one guy in particular is a perfect fit for Auburn University, and it's not Hugh Freeze, and it's not Deion Sanders. Auburn should take a hard look at Les Miles, Paul. Regardless of how it turned out in Kansas, I'm not looking at that. He went to Kansas. That was a tough situation. But look at Kansas now. He laid the foundation for what they got going on now. Les Miles is one of the few coaches out there to know what it takes to win in the SEC that can come in and get the type of players to compete with a Georgia and an Alabama. You got Texas and Oklahoma headed. You got to get somebody in Auburn that knows the landscape, that can go out and recruit at a high level. Simple Gus offense. It's schemed around a lot of deficiencies we have. Now, Harsin come in with the pro-style offense, and now you see all the deficiencies. So, the thing is, we just not a talented football team.
Well,
right
let me
now.
Try to explain this to you, Edward, and I don't even know what they call. I was driving to the Memphis airport the other day, and you ever seen where distribution centers – where they have these monster equipment where they pick up train cabs to load onto trucks?
Like
yeah.
Oh yeah.
Okay. Well, I can't remember. I don't know if they're called, but actually it's not train. It's they pick up the cabs to load onto a truck.
Cargo.
Mm-hmm. So fully loaded. I mean, you need a machine to do that. You just can't get about six guys and pick up. So the reason I thought of that is less. Hugh Freeze has baggage because of what happened at Ole Miss. He has the kind of baggage mm-hmm. that you can carry on your back as you're getting on an airplane and then put it in the overhead compartment.
Mm-hmm.
Les Miles has baggage that you need one of those machines to pick up to load on a truck. He's not hireable. Nobody's going to hire Les Miles because of the allegations, not at Kansas, but at LSU.
Yeah. I agree with that, but I think that that's what's the man that they should have went at a long time ago.
Well, I'm trying to say I don't think there's an athletic director in this country who would hire Les Miles right now. That doesn't mean that he's not a good coach.
That.
I mean, he's got a pretty good track record, really good track record.
But the thing is, with Auburn, it really ain't going to matter who we're going to hire.
Well, as I answer that question, Edward, you're probably right. I don't think it matters to Auburn. None of these things matter.
Whoever we hire, we're going to be ready to five in 2 or 3 years, regardless, because they're going to turn on him.
Well, I personally hope you're right, because
in 3 years, the first bad game he had, they want him out of there.
I think it would be so much fun to cover Les again, don't you? All the quirkiness and the craziness.
The smart move for the team is to hold on to Harsin and let Harsin go hire him an offensive coordinator.
Yeah, well.
Go get him a Dan Mullen or somebody to coach his offense, because that's really all what he's missing. He got to take his hand off the wheel with the offense and bring somebody in and let him run the offense.
Okay, well, listen, I hate to run, because this is such a substantive conversation, Edward, but we must. We are we're heading to a break, and there's some doubt whether we'll ever be back again after that call.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
And welcome back here on a Wednesday afternoon. The most feared words in the English language. Legend is next.
Woo! I love it, brother. I love it, my black hat brother. Talking about black hat brothers, I love what the handsome one did to that moron from Tuscaloosa yesterday. Slapped him around! That's why you're in the black hat mafia, boy. Loved it. Loved it. Handsome one. The international continental champion. Hey, Paul, can I tell you what Texas A&M's problem is?
Please do.
Now, me and you know this. Let's get real, because today's been about sports, and I love it, man. I love when fans come on. They've been bringing it, talking about the content, because I can talk sports, not like these morons. Here's the problem with Texas A&M, Paul. He's never recruited a Jameis Winston-type quarterback. Do you agree or not?
I do.
Yeah, I mean, come on. Four-star Haynes King and Calzado, the pepperoni Calzado. Come on. These are three- and four-star guys that you hope develop into a great quarterback. Now, Texas A&M got all them millions of billions. Why in the hell hadn't you went out and bought you an Arch Manning? Because we know you're buying everybody. So just go throw them $1 billion and become a real team. Because until you get a franchise quarterback, Indianapolis Colts, until you get a franchise quarterback, you are wasting your friggin' time. Tua, Jalen Hurts, Jones. That's why we're winning championships, because we have a franchise quarterback. And without one, Jimbo can talk all the friggin' smack he wants. He can talk all that crap he wants. But until he gets him a Arch Manning, until he gets him another Jameis Winston, he just spitting air into the sky, Paul. It means absolutely nothing. He's just ripping them folks off. That's all he's just ripping them off, Paul. This man is ripping folks off like Bill O'Brien. Why in the hell are you throwing the ball first and goal at the 3-yard line with a backup quarterback? Come on, you dummy. I mean, come on. How in the hell is this man still the offensive coordinator at Alabama? I can tell you why. Talent. Talent. That's why he's still there. The Jahmyr Gibbs talent. Now, the man talked about Deion Sanders. Talk about, well, I don't know what kind of coach he is. Well, I can tell you, John Wooden said he was the kind of coach he was because of talent. And Deion Sanders will bring something to Auburn that they ain't had in a long time. Talent. Why ain't they paying
paying me for this crap, Paul? Why ain't I getting paid for this? It's so friggin' simple, brother. It's so friggin' simple. It don't matter what kind of coach you got if you don't have the talent. Get the coach that can get the talent, then the coach will become the coach that represents the talent on the field. It's that friggin' simple. It don't cost $90 million. I'll do it for $100. Just throw me $100, and I'll break it down in the damn boardroom for you. It's that damn simple. Now, Paul, I want to talk to you about something else that's really on my heart, and I mean I'm serious, okay?
Sure.
Is that all right, brother?
You bet.
I'm pissed off with the NFL, man. I have ignored the politics. I have ignored all that. I never got into it because I bet on the game. I love to bet on the game. If I didn't bet on the NFL, I wouldn't watch it because it's a disgusting league, in my opinion, run by a bunch of disgusting billionaires that don't give a damn about the players on the field. And that's the real truth of the matter. What happened to Tua last Thursday night? Everybody in Miami should be damn fired, Paul. From Brian Flores to any doctor that looked at him to anybody that was associated with that situation, they ass should be fired. And that's a fact of the matter. I seen the Sunday game. I was watching it, had a bet on it with Buffalo. The man got up, Tua got up. He wasn't in his right mind. It wasn't no damn back injury. You could see he wasn't in his right mind. Then 3 days later, they put this man back on the field, and it almost cost him his life, proving that the NFL owners don't give a damn about anything other than the bottom line. They don't give a damn about any player out there on the field. What happened to Tua in my mind was a friggin' crime. As a fan, this goes out to you, owner, billionaire, bunch of punks. We love winning, but we love seeing our players not die on the field more. And what happened to Tua is pathetic. And the commissioner of the NFL is pathetic. And every one of the owners are pathetic. Because that Thursday night game, Paul, ain't nothing about but money. That's all that game's about. If you ever been to an NFL game, and I have, it is violent. It is violent. And it takes more than 3 days to heal up from before you put them back out on the field on a Thursday night. It was a frigging crime, and I hate the NFL. The only reason I watch it is because I bet on it, and I'm about to give up that damn bad habit. Get your act together. And if I was Tua, I'd retire and sue the hell out of them, Paul. Sue the absolute hell out of them. Thank you, Paul.
Thank you very much.
Elvis has left the building.
Legend. We'll take a short break. We have much more to come, including another interview. Bill Connelly is on deck, and more phone calls right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business. No matter what stage you're in, shopify.com/network.
And welcome back here on a Wednesday afternoon. And Bill Connelly joins us from ESPN. We showed his headline earlier about those teams who are still in good stead as we are beginning to trend toward the middle of the college football season. Bill, good to have you on. Thank you very much. So, Your thoughts about where we are right now and what this CFP race is shaping up to be.
Well, it is funny. We've been distracted by lots of really – I mean, I think it's been a really fun first few weeks. We've got the Kansases, and you've got a lot of teams like that, the Syracuses and Dukes that have overachieved. And, you know, it's really brought kind of some early life. And then you look up, and the top three is still the top three. And Michigan was one of the key candidates for number four. They're still number four. Clemson's still unbeaten. And so – I wrote on Monday, I had to write a piece and just kind of step back and look at, like, what's actually changed here? And as far as the CFP race goes, not much. There are teams like TCU out there and teams that could win their conference with a 12-1 or 13-0 record and you know, kind of sneak in surprising fashion. But the best teams have certainly been the best teams so far.
Among the teams that are there and expected to be there, there are some issues, especially with Georgia. You look at things a little differently than the fan at the end of the bar. What are you seeing from them that's different? Because 3 weeks ago, we were seeing one of the best teams we've ever seen.
Yeah. No, this was through three weeks, that they were pretty much perfect. And then, you know, Kent State lands some shots we didn't expect to. And then Missouri was interesting because in one sense you do still get the impression that it's just kind of an attention span problem. Like once they have to dial in and once they realize they have to dial in, they do so. And they were pretty much perfect in the fourth quarter against Missouri, but they aren't making the big plays in the passing game have disappeared. Obviously there have been a lot of injuries that they've dealt with out wide and it started to show up. Missouri really challenged them to beat them deep and they couldn't really do it. And so if there's a lasting problem there, and they could get guys healthy and everything's fine, but that's the one kind of lasting issue I've got a question about. It's really starting to bog their offense down a little bit, and you know, that becomes a problem when you look at a schedule that Auburn's defense is probably better than Missouri's, Mississippi State's and Kentucky's are probably better than Missouri. Those games are on the road, too, and you could see some problems if they can't quite keep things opened up like that.
Bill, let's get outside of the SEC because we spent enough time inside. Michigan, I'm really interested in them because, you know, the questions are now, is this the same Michigan team from last year? But it looks like a different team. What do they look like to you?
Yeah, it's hard to, you know, they had the softest non-conference schedule ever to start the season, and you didn't really know what to take from that. But since they started Big Ten play, I mean, Maryland's got really good offense, and they outscored that team and won by seven. Iowa, of course, has a really good defense, and they put up 27 points and kept that one mostly at bay. So it's been pretty workmanlike since the competition ramped up. And I figure they have an advantage over Penn State here in a couple of weeks, although Penn State defense is really good too. It does feel like, you know, going with J.J. McCarthy at quarterback was an admission that maybe they need a little bit more upside than what they had last year once they got into the playoff and realized they couldn't do anything against Georgia's defense. You know, maybe that was a sign that they really want to try to increase the explosiveness a little bit. Haven't really seen that on paper just yet, but they're still very efficient and they've been much better than the opponents they've played so far. So we'll see if they really are explosive and they're more dangerous than they were a year ago. They'll win at Ohio State and we'll get all the questions answered that we needed.
I don't want to hear that, please. Bill, what about Clemson, which has passed some pretty critical tests on a 2-week run through Wake and NC State? They still have Notre Dame later. I'm not sure that really matters, but they seem like they're in great shape.
They've won with defense. They've won with offense the last couple of weeks, and that's always kind of a good sign, especially they didn't really win with any offense at all last year. I don't know what to think of the ACC. It really doesn't seem very good this year, and barely beating Wake Forest might not turn out to be all that amazing a thing. But if they can, assuming they handle Boston College just fine, still kind of a weird test at Florida State, weird test at Notre Dame. It does kind of seem like the schedule has opened up nicely for them, especially if the ACC isn't very good again. But I still don't quite trust them at the level of a top five team. I would put at least Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State, and Michigan ahead of them at this point.
Bill, should we be believing in Southern Cal?
I I need to see what happens when the turnover, you know, when the spigot gets turned off in terms of turnovers and turnovers luck. They've still very much benefited from some fortunate bounces in that regard, bounces that could have made the Stanford game weird, you know, it could have flipped the Oregon State game. So I'm not there yet, but I will say, I mean, Washington State this week has a very good defense, a weird and quality defense. And Utah's just good. Ever since, you know, they basically had two red zone glitches against Florida. And if they pull that game out, they're a top five team right now. And I think if USC wins at Utah, they're still unbeaten in 2 weeks, I'll start to believe in them at least as kind of a top 10 caliber team. I've been slow to grow to them because I just don't like that defense very much. But if they beat Utah, I don't really have any excuses left.
Talking to Bill Connelly, let me come back to one of the teams that we do obsess over here, and that's Alabama. We don't know what the situation is with Bryce Young, but it's a pretty safe bet he's not going to be as good, at least for a while. Right. How does that change the calculus?
If A&M had any offense whatsoever, it would make this game pretty interesting because A&M still does a very good job of preventing big plays and make you use a lot of snaps to go down the field. And if it's, you know, Bryce Young not really trusting his arm, or whether it's Jalen Milroe, who was kind of all or nothing last week, you can kind of talk yourself into A&M making some stops and staying in that game. But, I mean, A&M still has to score, and Alabama's defense is as good as it's been in a number of years. And I figure that's what carries them here. Tennessee can obviously land some shots offensively, but they probably aren't up for the task defensively overall. Mississippi State's well-rounded, but Saban doesn't usually struggle with Mississippi State all that much. I do feel like they have enough quality, especially on defense now, to get them through if the offense isn't completely humming. But once you get into, obviously, you need Bryce Young healthy at the end of the year, and we'll see exactly how bad this injury. It looked horrible. Like, I was really worried. It was so awkward. And I'm glad they said it was more of a day-to-day thing, but you do figure it might be a little while till he's 100%.
Bill Connelly on the race for the playoffs. We're still about 4 weeks away from the first all-important CFP standings. We'll take a short break. Much more to come. Your phone call's right around the corner.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Welcome back. And William is in Maryville. You're on, William. How are you?
Hello. Oh, good, Paul. How are you?
Very well.
Can I'd like to address two things that Legend said and then talk money for a minute. You know, in regard to players, there's an old saying that you can't win the Kentucky Derby with a mule, even a fast mule. And you got to have thoroughbreds. And he's exactly right. Now, I think the one thing I disagree with him on is you don't always have to have a five stars, but you have to have somebody that can take those 3 and 4 stars and turn them into five stars. So you got to have talent. But number two, I'd like to talk about Tua and the concussion issue. You know, nobody's really mentioned the fact that young men's brains don't fully develop until they're 25, 26 years old. And it's not the first concussion, it's the second concussion. And as a parent, I've lived it. I've seen the effect of multiple concussions. And once you have multiple concussions, you're more likely to get more concussions. And having two concussions, of course, it used to be they'd say, well, is it a grade one? Did you lose consciousness versus just get your bell rung versus just shake a little bit? I don't know any of those make any sense because all the tests until you do a CTE analysis or autopsy once you're dead, all the tests are symptomatic, and people react to symptoms and can answer test questions differently. Someone in Tua's condition, hopefully, is sitting in a dark room without any stimulus, without the phone, without TV, without reading, and letting their brain rest. I can't imagine him being on a football field for at least a year. Now, I'm not a doctor, but I'm someone who had a lot of experience with a son who had multiple concussions. And the science has changed in the last 10 or 12 years, and it's only gotten more worrisome for anybody that plays football. But with that said, I want to talk money a minute. Can we talk money a minute, Paul?
I'll do my best to hang in this conversation.
Well, have you seen the articles in Town and Country and New Yorker about the demographics of Southern student bodies?
No.
Well, there's two articles recently in two national magazines that deal with the fact that more and more Northern students are coming South, and more are coming for a little more conservative outlook. They're coming for the SEC Southern football experience. They're coming for campus life. And if you look at that, think about it. If an Alabama, because of their football program, can attract someone from New York, and they get 2,000 more out-of-state students that pay an additional $30,000 a year, what is that, $60 million in revenue to the university without any appreciable increase in overhead? And it's very interesting that two magazines are noticing the shift, especially very highly qualified academic students coming into the various honors colleges at universities which most Northerners look down upon, but they realize that an honors education at Auburn or Alabama or Tennessee or Ole Miss is really just as good as an education you're going to get. And, you know, my nephew was raised in the West, and he wanted to come South for one reason. He'd watched college sports. Hmm. And he's at Ole Miss, and his girlfriend's at Alabama. And, you know, you look at that as an economic boost for the university in general, and a large part because of their cool factor in sports.
That I agree with you, but it's still remarkable to hear that laid out. And I've talked to college presidents about the importance of football, and it's not just the one loss record. It's you're right. It's the experience.
Well, I mean, my nephew, who was a very good high school athlete, wanted the experience, looked at Tennessee, Ole Miss, and Alabama. His girlfriend is at Alabama. He's at Ole Miss. Had no connection with either university beforehand, but they saw Kiffin, they saw Saban, they saw the Grove, they saw the experience. And I don't know that he even considered any of the Western schools. Now, you know, one of the things that people don't realize about many of the Pac-12 or Pac-10 schools is the ones outside of California are filled with California kids. ASU,
right.
U of A, you know, Colorado. I mean, all of those California kids are staying within the Pac, you know, 10 or Pac-12, whatever they call it. But these articles set forth the economics of changing the demographics of your student body as an economic boon.
Well, we'll put it on my reading list for Friday. I think we're speaking to a college president this weekend. We've talked to a few. That's really interesting. And I think it goes into the money factor too. I don't have a problem with anybody making a lot of money. What I have a problem with are the buyouts. We've had that conversation. That's where it gets ridiculous.
The buyout of Butch Jones is when I first started calling you years ago.
I remember that.
And
hey, by the way, in your investigation of that, did you ever come up with a substantive reason why they gave a guy that nobody else wanted that type of buyout?
No, I sent letters to a lot of people around the state of Tennessee and at the University of Tennessee. I went so far as I got a call from their general counsel one day. And nobody I mean, nobody gave me any explanation. And, you know, the kind of the consensus was, well, you know, if we don't pay him, we'll never get another coach. And I raised the issue of Steve Sarkisian at USC. They didn't pay him, and he sued them, and the school won.
Right.
And they obviously got another good coach. And, no, I could never get any sort of a legal, business, ethical reason why Butch Jones was paid and he wasn't required.
Well, it's such a mismatch, William, when you have an organization and, you know, these agents, there's a handful of you hear one name, but he's part of a massive group, a talent agency that has all the bells and whistles. The same firm that represents Nick Saban represents Tom Cruise, and represents lowly people like you're looking at here. It's not a fair fight when you have the power of a Hollywood agency, which is the group, dealing with an athletic director who's looking over his shoulder at all times and doesn't want to get caught in the crossfire in social media and elsewhere.
And like you said earlier, who's not spending his own money.
Exactly.
And, you know, you have no accountability.
And if you miss, you miss. You know, by the way, the president that you're accountable to, he may be gone by the time the coach's situation is cleared up. So he doesn't even know what's going on and probably has no clue. Hey, thanks for the call, William. Always enjoyable. We still have an hour to go. We look forward to talking more to you.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.